Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Good evening, John.
Good evening, Ben. Hi, everyone.
Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. You can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. And we'll start, as ever, with what to see in the night sky. Yes, we have a night sky at the moment, John.
We have, ish. Mostly. It's getting later and later. A space station coming up to the end of its little stint.
Yes.
I haven't seen it this particular month. The weather hasn't been marvellous, although it's been floating in and out. Mm. So the clouds, brightness, stars, everything. Anyway, finishing up May the 23rd.
Have tonight's time.
Yep, and that's a nighttime viewing, and you can look forward to that as well. I don't know, you have tonight's time.
Yes, 10:22 p.m. until 11:30 p.m. or not 11:30, I beg your pardon, 10:30 p.m. So that's, of course, an 8 minute window there between 10:22 this evening and 10:30. Pretty good pass, I suppose. Maximum altitude 43 degrees and maximum magnitude of -3.2. So quite bright, reasonably high in the sky, as ever, going west to east.
East, yep.
At the same apparent speed as high-flying aircraft, but not. It is, of course, going 70,500 miles per hour, and when it's above us or near to us, it'll be at 250 miles or 400 kilometres above the Earth, not a mere 35,000 or 40,000 feet. So that's the ISS tonight. Hopefully we get clear skies for that. That's 10:22 p.m. until 10:30 p.m. this evening. Look for a bright light, go west to east. It'll be constantly bright, not like an aircraft with flashing lights. This is just what you're seeing, of course, is the reflection of the sunlight off the huge solar panels that take up the size of a football pitch or two football pitches.
Mm-hmm. Including the stadium.
Massive.
Brilliant. Now, you want the short version or the long version?
Of
the planets.
Of the planets.
Yeah, we can.
Well, considering the short nights, make it a short version.
No, we'll have a reasonably long one. Mercury, unfortunately, out of sight in conjunction with the sun, so you don't get a chance to see that. I did notice, Ben, during the week, Venus and Jupiter are getting close. They're noticeably closer to each other.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I just go back a month or two and they just looked way, way apart. But they are making the appearance of getting close together. And they will do as the months progress. So Venus, it's the brighter one at -3.9. It shines bright white in the west-northwest during evening twilight. And Jupiter, on the other hand, -2.0 in Gemini, beside Castor and Pollux, those two very distinguished stars, distinguishable stars. And it's quite a nice sight when you get a good clear evening. And we've had a few. It's been sort of cloudy, you know, clear, cloudy, clear. You have to be there at the right time, unfortunately. Uranus is lost in the sunset at the moment. Neptune is also hiding low in the sunrise. And Mars and Saturn are low in the bright sunrise, so not a great chance to see those. Only you will be able to see them if you bring binoculars and know where to look for them. But really the ones, I suppose, Venus and Jupiter, they're the ones to watch for. They're a fine sight. They really are.
Mercury, as you mentioned, it's too close to the sun at the moment, but I think later in the month and early next month, it'll start to appear again in the evening sky, if I'm not mistaken. But I'll give you more information about that next week. Meanwhile, of course, a little closer to home, we have the moon. We have a 13% waxing crescent moon at the moment. It is currently on view, of course, and it will set in the early hours of tomorrow morning, about 1:24 a.m. tomorrow morning, and will rise again at 8:13 a.m. tomorrow morning, at which stage it'll be up to an 18% waxing crescent moon. As we head towards the first quarter moon, which will be on Saturday the 23rd, can you believe it, at 12:10 p.m. I think it's Saturday 23rd, I better check that now. And of course we have the sun, which rises tomorrow, would you believe it, 5:17 a.m., 11 minutes earlier than a week ago, local or solar noon, when the sun is at its highest and due south of us here in Dublin. That's at 1:21 p.m. and the sun sets at 9:26 p.m. tomorrow, which is a whole 11 minutes later than a week ago. We have then the twilights, of course, are getting longer. We'll have civil twilight until just after 10 minutes past 10, and nautical twilight ending at 11:30, and then we'll have astronomical twilight throughout the night. There will be no astronomical night until the end of July, around about the 30th of July or so. Now, astronomical night is defined as when the sun is 18 degrees or more below the horizon. So we're into those, as we've all noticed, I'm sure, the long, long twilights in the evenings.
It's quite easy to remember the 6, 12, 18 rules. That's the three.
Yeah, the civil twilight ends when the, as I mentioned there, when at 10:12 tomorrow evening, that's when the sun will be 6 degrees below the horizon, and then nautical twilight ending at 11:30 is when the sun is 12 degrees below the horizon, and then astronomical twilight would end if it ever got below 18 degrees below the horizon, but it doesn't at this time of the year. We'll have to wait for, as I mentioned here, at the end of July before we have astronomical night again. So if you're into, it's a good time, of course, to view planets when they're on view, of course, and not so much for the very dark, deep sky object where you need a really dark sky.
Yeah.
But that's it. On the other good side of it, of course, is it's not as cold when you're viewing at this time of the year, as opposed to when you're doing your viewing some of the very deep sky objects in December and January.
I think it's time to build an observatory at home, a heated observatory.
Yeah,
that'd be good, wouldn't it?
You can't do that.
Yeah, well, you could.
You could build it, but the whole idea is, although the convection currents from your heater, it's going to affect the visibility.
You might as well just sit there and shiver.
The whole idea is if you can sit inside and watch it on the screen, it's not the same.
Those cameras that they have you connected, CCDs, is that the one?
Oh, CCDs?
CCDs, yeah. It's the ones you plug them in, camera outside, you inside on a computer screen. That's the way to do it. I don't know whether I mentioned, the 1st of May we had a full flower moon. And some find it quite lucky, like I do, to have a blue moon the same month. So we've Friday the 1st was a full flower moon. And on 31st, we have the full blue moon. So we have a blue moon, which is essentially the second moon within the month. Yep.
I think some people define it as the fourth full moon. Or if there's four moons in the quarter year. But it might even be the third of the four.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
So whichever way you would define it.
Luckily enough, and I find it quite lucky.
Lucky?
Buy a lottery ticket or something.
I don't suppose you would all be buying lottery tickets. So we can't all be lucky because it's a blue moon.
Yeah, well, that's it. We study this type of stuff, so we are. We're quite lucky.
You make
your own luck, yeah.
You're superstitious.
No.
It's bad luck to be superstitious.
I like lucky. That's funny for you.
Thank you.
There you go. So first was the full flower moon, and the 31st is the full blue moon. So we shall look forward to that. I don't know if you've been watching NASA's the Artemis astronaut training mock-up unit, which is the Blue Origin's lunar lander mock-up, and it's ready for NASA's Artemis astronaut training. This simulator will help train Artemis 3 astronauts before their mission next year. And the, funnily enough, the Orion Space Capsule Training Simulator is located inside Building Number 9 at Johnson Space Center in Houston. It's a full-scale, high-fidelity model of the real thing, and where the Artemis II astronauts spent more than a year preparing for their recent mission around the moon. Now, for a long time, the simulator sat alone in its own little corner away from the group of International Space Station training modules that were lined up inside the Space Vehicle Mock-up Facility, that's the SVMF. But now Orion has a new neighbour, and we're looking forward to getting that as well. So the Blue Moon crew cabin and exterior resemble the designer and designs of the lander's Mark II variant, which will eventually land Artemis astronauts on the moon if all goes according to plan. So we'll keep a little eye on that and keep you fully informed of what's going on that area.
Thank you, John. Now, I see the very rare event, a European and Chinese joint mission. It did launch last Tuesday, was it not? It was the Solar Wind Magnetosphere Ionosphere Link Explorer, otherwise known as SMILE. Anyway, this SMILE, it's designed to produce the first wide-field soft X-ray images of the boundary where the solar wind meets the Earth's magnetic sphere. Now, this is a region where has been studied for many a long year. But it was launched upon a Vega C launcher, and it will be in a polar orbit. It'll rise far above the North Pole at apogee.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be furthest from the Earth at apogee above the North Pole, and it'll dip closer to the Earth at above the South Pole or below the South Pole, depending on your orientation, at perigee. So the idea is that from above the pole, it will look down at the dayside magnetopause, they call it, and the auroral oval for long stretches at a time, rather than some of the lower orbit spacecraft that managed to kind of fly through it for a couple of seconds. But the whole idea is that they can, instead of taking like short, sharp, snappy pictures, for want of a better word, of the data where how the magnetosphere, the magnetic field around the Earth is behaving, that they'll get a more continuous, more like a video, so they can study the magnetosphere around the Earth. And what that does, of course, is this is the like the Van Allen belts and such like that help protect the Earth from all those ionized particles coming in from the sun. And if we didn't have this magnetic field, we would indeed be bathed in all sorts of radiation, which would, as Mark Antony said earlier, give us a very deep tan, but it would give us more than a deep tan. In fact, it would sterilize the Earth. Basically, life on Earth as we know it would not be possible. So we have a lot to thank the magnetosphere for. And the soft ray imager is one of the four instruments above us. The other three are an ultraviolet imager, a light ion analyzer, and a magnetometer. And what they're going to do is, they say that the soft X-ray imager is what they say is the main part of the mission, and it uses lobster eye optics to observe soft X-rays created by solar wind charge exchange. And how that interacts with the neutral hydrogen in the upper Earth's atmosphere. So they'll be able to study it a lot more and learn a bit more. Now, it's not designed to be a space weather forecast, but just to, again, gain more knowledge about the protective shield that we have around the Earth that protects us from being essentially fried with radiation.
Yeah, it wouldn't be pleasant if all that stuff got through. We had yesterday a close approach of a newly discovered asteroid the size of an adult blue whale. I haven't heard that one before. It's buses, cars, biscuit tins, trains, I know all sorts of things, but this one is an adult blue whale. And it flew past Earth yesterday at 5:23 p.m. GMT, which is, where are we now? That's GMT is...
G Warrior, which is the same still, as UT. Still, we're UT plus GMT plus one at the moment, because it's summertime.
So unfortunately, it was still bright.
Bright here.
Yeah, unfortunately, so we didn't get to see it. It did cloud over later on, up to sort of midnight last night, and then after that it cleared up for a while, went back out about two to have a little snoop around, as I usually do, and it clouded over again. Now, remarkable. So, this particular one, this is 2026 JH2, or otherwise known as Asteroid 2026, to give it its full name, the 2026 JH2, which was discovered on May the 10th by the Mount Lemmon survey in Arizona, following up observations estimate asteroid measures between 52 and 114 feet, if you work in feet and inches, or 16 to 35 metres, and based on its apparent brightness, it passed within 56,628 miles, which is only 91,000 kilometres while travelling at about 19,500 miles per hour, which is a little bit faster than the satellites and the space station are going up there at the moment relative to Earth. And it was a pity it didn't happen just a little bit later, then we might have had a chance to see it. Now, somewhere, somebody I would have imagined would have seen it somewhere. So again, we're not going to have another one of those. So watch out for blue whales flying through the sky. That's my little message to you. So unfortunately, there we go. NASA's Artemis 2 astronauts saw flashes on the far side. Now, I read this just the other day on the moon, that cameras that actually struggled to capture, whether they were going too fast, I don't know. And scientists were getting all excited about all this. So the Artemis 2 astronauts remained vigilant while zipping around the far side of the moon last month, as you remember, on the ready to record meteoroid impact flashes on the lunar landscape. Their diligence was rewarded. Now, this was caught mostly by vision and not by cameras. So all four crew members reported seeing several impact flashes, flickers of light created when the little meteoroid, depending how big it is, hits the surface of the moon and then vaporizes, so it wouldn't do an awful lot of damage, I don't think, but it just make a little puff of moon regolith as well. So it's would have been interesting to see, because they were on, okay, we're going to call it the dark side, but it's not really the dark side, it's the dark side away from us and where they could see it as well. But it's a pity. I think they did get a couple of pictures all right, but not to any significance as well, but they got a better view by just raw sight, I presume, as well. So they're doing a couple of experiments into that to see, you know, what they were, how quickly they were going, etc., which is a quite fun thing to do. And the other thing I noticed as well was the giant radio telescope. There's one that sees Artemis 2 astronauts on Orion flying around the moon, and these four people in those little pixels that I can see here are actually a picture of the little space module heading towards the moon. It's worth a little look. Okay, you wouldn't really recognize what it was, because it's a sort of just a blur of pixels, no doubt, because it's taking a huge big wide view of the sky and they have to bring it in closer just to show us, but just to show that it was possible to take a picture of the Artemis 2 mission on its way to the moon. And it was about 200,000 miles away in this particular radio telescope. And it's experiments all round for this one, just to see what exactly they'll come back with on that. So that'll be a little bit of fun to watch that as well.
Thank you, John. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. That's 087-179-1032. And you can also catch us live on the internet at dublincityfm.ie and also as a podcast. Now, John, last week we mentioned about the light. We were talking about distances measured in light years and light seconds and all the and that type of thing, and we were saying that the light from the moon, which of course is reflecting light from the sun, because the moon doesn't generate its own light no more than the planet Earth does, that it takes just over 1 second, about 1.25 seconds to reach us. So we can say the moon is 1.25 light seconds away. And yeah, we were talking about, of course, the light from the sun taking about 8 minutes, 8.25 minutes, and the time it takes for a signal to get to the Voyager spacecrafts.
Yeah.
It's about 24 hours. It's about one light day away, billions and billions of miles away, even after, what's it, nearly, oh, it's coming up to, not 30 years, or am I going to be coming up to 60 years,
60 years
next year, mm-hmm. anniversary of those launches. But, and you may know, I suppose, that, or you may have heard that the light is bouncing around in the sun for 100,000 years or so before it.
This is the interesting thing about that. It just bounces
before it escapes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then makes its way to us in 8 minutes. But it's not quite that. What happens is, basically, the photon that hits your eye as sunlight that took 8 minutes to get there was not really the same particle that's been bouncing about in the core of the sun for 100,000 years or so. Let's go back to, I suppose, what happens in the core of the sun. That's where the fusion happens. Under the immense pressure and heat, the hydrogen nuclei, they combine into helium. They release energy, first in the form that includes gamma ray photons and neutrons. And, of course, the neutrons basically don't or barely interact with matter, so they can stream out of the sun almost immediately, but the photons cannot do that. So, and there at the core, the matter is so dense, the radiation does not travel far before it runs into other charged particles. So you have these particles in plasma and little bits of energy. The energy is always conserved. That's right. The right word. But of course, the identity of the particle is not. So it's kind of a random walk of energy being absorbed and released and absorbed. And as one particle or it bumps into another. You can imagine, I was thinking of a kind of a ping pong machine where something gets bounced around in there for the machine for a long time before it eventually finds its way out. But you can imagine walking around a, one of those play centers, all the spongy things like trampolines, you get bounced from one side of the end to the other, and you go back and forth, and you absorb energy and release energy, and then eventually at some moment in time, you'll have your path will be free. You'll make your way to the outer core. In this case, the photon makes its way to the outer core of the sun, and then it's where it's less dense, and it can move a bit faster, and then the photon gets... Eventually escapes the sun and takes 8 minutes to get here after it's in various previous forms it would have spent 100,000 years on average bouncing around on the inside of the sun, but not the actual photon itself, kind of a different form of energy.
A little bit over our heads, I think. Yeah, now it's all to do with tests at the moment. NASA's exoplanet hunting transiting exoplanet survey satellite, and it is out there mooching around and taking big, wide sweeping, we call it, photographs as well. They've found 10,091 candidate planets, exoplanets hiding in NASA data. So a little bit of experimentation going on there. And to date, humanity has discovered over 6,200 confirmed exoplanets, but they're saying now that there are possibly another 10,000 exoplanets hiding in NASA. So they're just hiding somewhere. So no doubt we get more information as the time wears on.
Thank you, John. Have we time for one more?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yes.
We have time for loads more. Well, well, we don't really. Just I was looking today. You know the way we have light pollution in our cities and sort of in villages and towns and things like that? Seemingly there's a new type of telescope out there. It's called a Vespera Pro telescope, and it's designed to see through and into space past all the light pollution. And looking into this earlier on today, there's you know about the Veil Nebula. That's quite a difficult. I've seen that.
I've seen pictures.
Yeah, really, when you're looking through a telescope, you only really see it through the peripheral vision, as you look into it. You won't get to see it directly. It's 2,100 light years away in the constellation of Cygnus. Yet, watching it gradually reveal itself in the palm of your hand with this new telescope is mind-boggling, because usually you have to use something like a 20-inch telescope or more to see this particular fella. And I did see it through a 20-inch telescope that we know somebody has. And it's quite interesting, some of the photographs that it's taken. Now, they take photographs over hours and hours and hours and then stack them all on top of each other. I just haven't got my head around how they do this, but the photographs belonging to this thing is absolutely incredible. So just keep an eye out for one of these Vesperas. That's V-E-S-P-E-R-A Pro. And it handles galaxies as well, so you can get anything through this thing. It's a peculiar looking thing. It looks like a torpedo. And then you can slide it up so that it opens out, and you can train it on the sky as well. So it sees all sorts of things as well. I'm just looking at a photograph here of the Pleiades cluster M45. And just to give you an example, it took 2.7 hours by this camera to do it, but it did manage to take it from a fairly, we call it a dull light source, I suppose, here in one of the big towns around, or one of the big cities. So new kids on the block, ones we're used to, they sell astronomy.
I presume it's some type of the adaptive optics.
It's all to do with the optics on this one. It's much, much more improved. That's the correct way of saying it. So, but you've got to go out night after night after night to get these things. Mm. How they do it, I don't know. I'm going to have to find somebody to show me. Maybe you could show me.
Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Thank you, John. And I see a cargo Dragon just flew its sixth mission to the International Space Station. And that was SpaceX's 34th cargo supply mission to the ISS. That was on May 15th. And it was on a Dragon capsule on top of a Falcon 9, which was flying its sixth trip to orbit. So just the thing about this is, I suppose, that there's new milestones about reusing the rockets and the Falcon 9 boosters, etc., etc., and new records being broken to such a degree that not even reported. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that every bit that went up was just once-off use. But now this the Falcon 9 was flying its sixth trip, and these records will be continually to be broken. And the whole idea is, of course, that this make, because you can reuse them and they're not once-off disposables, the price and the cost of space flight is being rapidly reduced. And unfortunately, we don't have any more time to go into that. Perhaps we will at a future date, but that's all the time we have this evening. Thank you, John, for your news items and for driving the sound desk, of course, this evening. But that's all of us. That's all we have this evening for you. And that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of The Astronomy Show. And it's music all the way on here on 103.2 Dublin City FM until 2 a.m. Up next, we have Dublin's greatest hits. And from 10 p.m. until midnight, Nigel Wood has his ear to the globe with his world music mix. And from midnight till 2 a.m., David Barry in a program called After Hours. And he has a mix of jazz, blues, and soul. And he'll be there and going on until 2 a.m. But please join myself, but not John.
Yeah.
At the same time, 7:30 p.m. next week, when I'll be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening, and say good night, John.
Good night, John.
Good night, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.